Just the simplicity of it compared to other standards, I think has been really appealing, both from on the design side, but also, the air tightness level that has to be hit with the standard is like a real challenge for builders. And so if there's builders that aren't interested in doing that, like that's kind of a sign in terms of
It's not
like
gonna work.
their level of quality, their interests around green building, whatever it is. But the right builders get really excited about it.
Hi. Hello.
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 Hello, and welcome to Architecting.
Hi, welcome to Architecting. I'm Rebecca Wagner here with the host, Adam. Hey, Adam, who's on the podcast today?
Hey, I just saw this thing on LinkedIn where it said that podcast hosts need to do a better job of introducing themselves in their podcast because we assume that every person listens to every episode. But some people, this might be your first episode here.
Yeah, Adam, who
Well,
are you?
welcome to Architecting. I am Adam Wagner. I am an architect. I have a new architecture firm called High Low Buffalo, and I teach at the University of Colorado, Denver. And this is my more talented wife, Rebecca Wagner. Who are you?
Oh, I just do the intros.
She just does the intros. I can only afford to pay her to do the intros because she's the Young Architect of the Year for Colorado and works at the firm Gensler. So I can't afford her billing rates to do the whole podcast, just these intros. So, what was your question?
Who's on the podcast today?
Oh, today we have Morgan Law and Steve Scribner of Shape Architecture. You know them?
I know of them.
They, along with you, swept the awards at the IA Colorado
Yes.
this year. They had a lot of projects win awards. They've been grinding with Shape Architecture for a while. They have a pretty interesting story that we'll get into of sort of who was the initial founder, and then someone left and other person took over and came back and blah blah blah. You'll hear that one. But a good story, a pretty unique story there. But yeah, I mean, to me, these are just two really solid architects who are really think about craft and think about building solid projects, buildings, houses, some small commercial spaces. But doing a lot with like passive house and thinking about sustainability in different ways and really building out their small firm.
Cool. I'm excited to hear it.
Yeah, good stuff. And like I said, yeah, go check out my new architecture firm, highlowbuffalo.co. That's the website. I'm doing a lot of design consulting these days. So if you're just sitting in your basement of your one-person architecture firm, or maybe you have a larger architecture firm but are just looking for new ideas, hit me up, schedule a meeting or a coffee, and let's talk about how I can help you and enhance the things you're already doing. So check that out.
Cool.
Sounds good. See ya. Enjoy.
Hey, this episode is brought to you in part by Signature Doors and Windows and Modern Denver Magazine. Now, on to the show.
Thanks for coming in. How many times have we scheduled this? It's been a few.
We tried. Is this? I
We
think it's
made
only
it.
Number three.
Yeah, he
And
is.
it's only because of the specialness of this place, because Morgan was going to call in. We were going to be able to
Oh,
hold
right.
an
That's right.
appointment, but Morgan was going to be in Leadville, and he wouldn't have the bright lights to keep him
Yeah, we heard
honest.
rumors about the new studio. We're like, we got to make
we,
that happen.
You're going to hold out.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, how? So you live in Leadville, right?
Yeah.
And then what's your week look like?
Oh man, good question. So yeah, I'm up there, and then I come down once a week, every week, and I come down usually on Wednesday and stay overnight, stay at Steve's house with him and his family, and then go back up Thursday.
Just pull like an all-nighters, and
It
then
kind
go
of
back and
turns
then
into that
ski the
every
rest of the
Wednesday night.
weekend.
Yeah,
like, dang it, how did it get to be midnight?
Yeah,
and we're just like
it's like
having
study
it
hall
saved.
every week.
Yeah,
like sleepovers.
It is great though, because that, like, if Morgan lived in Denver, we wouldn't have that time where we're drinking beers and like getting honest and into some of the stuff that you can't do on screen share or in
we
the
sort of don't have time for during the day. Yeah,
I didn't think about that, because that is really important. You know, like I had this other partner for the last 2 years, and we broke up, and that was probably the hardest thing, where you never had that just like downtime to drink a beer or just talk about something, right? It's always like, hey, let's jump on Zoom, and I've got half hour, or I've got whatever.
Right, and like, yeah, everyone's distracted and working on different stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it's hard to, yeah. And, you know, we're good friends, and we're still good friends, but I heard a thing of, if you need like good experiences to overdo one bad experience, and it's hard to have those many good just over Zoom or email or something. But
I can't imagine that fully remote. I mean, we would never have designed our practice to have evolved the way it has, but I do feel like it's kind of like best case. You know, Morgan actually gets to get work done 3 days a week.
Yeah, exactly, totally.
While I'm in the office.
And he's only driving 2 days a week. Yeah, yeah, right, driving
exactly,
all day.
Totally.
For,
yeah, he's totally.
Because how long is that drive?
It's like an hour and a half.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's not bad.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I don't mess with the rush hour or anything, so it's nice.
And, like, there's always a dozen people you probably should call, but you never make time to do it. Well, if you have an hour and a half drive, he actually makes those phone calls.
So does that go the other way? Are you going up there much?
No. I mean,
you don't have as nice of a basement for him to
Exactly. Yeah, the crawl space is not really the crawl.
Actually, that is not true. It's way better accommodations than when he has an extra bedroom.
What prompted that move up to Leadville?
That's a good question. It's kind of a long story, but...
how far back do you want to go?
Yeah. Most recently, my wife got a job up there, and we were actually living in Washington State at the time. And so, you know, pre-pandemic, I wouldn't have thought that Leadville could work and kind of keep a functioning business in Denver. But yeah, you know, I was like, basically came back and I was talking to him about coming back to the firm, and, you know, begged and pleaded to see if he would let me back. He took me back, which is really nice of him. And then,
you've only broken my heart once.
So yeah, we, you know, and it's been great. I figured I'd be up there, you know, working on stuff down here, but I think I'm maybe still the only architect in the county. So it's not a big county, but,
Yeah,
it's cool to be working up there and just, you know, be a little bit closer to some of the communities there. And,
well, we're getting ahead of ourselves here. Your wife will get mad at me if I don't ask you the hard question first. Stacy already had to do it with Superbloom, but so yeah. So, who are you, guys? However you want to answer that.
Go ahead.
I guess I'm a Mainer. I'm from Maine. It's you can't take the boy out of you can take the boy out of the state, but to me that's like I'm like a do-it-yourselfer, tinkerer. I like the road less traveled, or the being off the beaten path. I like following the game trails when hiking, you know, bushwhacking. I can fix anything. My wife, she says, I like things that suck. I don't think they suck. Yeah. but I guess it's sort of like, yeah, if something's going to be hard or uncomfortable, like maybe it's for me.
Huh. Morgan?
Yeah, I guess
you like the easy things in life.
Yeah, exactly. I don't really like things that suck. I guess I'm a frugal New Englander as well, from growing up. But I'm a father, husband, architect, passionate guy about design and getting outside.
Yeah. So where did you grow up then?
New Hampshire.
Oh, okay.
Just right down the road from this guy.
New Hampshire.
Yeah.
Call yourself a New Englander, huh?
There's all these New England jokes that, like, it's way too far away from me. Growing up in Kansas, I'm like, I think that's English. I think it's a joke. I don't know, but
yeah, totally. There's some levels there.
It's like, I've been driving for 2 hours and I've been through three states. What's going on here?
Right.
New Hampshire. Was it the same sort of like game trails, like hiking? Outdoor stuff?
Yeah, what? Yeah, there was a lot of that. There was a lot of, like, yeah, just growing up in the woods and building stuff and having free time, you know, like unstructured playtime and, very rural, you know, setting, and yeah, it was great.
What were you around? Were you, what did your parents do, or like, did you have much of a connection to, say, architecture early on?
Yeah, no, not really. Yeah, again, it was just like, there was a lot of fort building. I remember I was like 12 or something, I built this 3-story fort, like with different levels on it and everything, and like eventually brought candles in there to like light it up, and the whole thing burned down. It was very, very tragic.
Ever since, you've been really into building.
Yeah, exactly, totally, totally, yes.
Learned the lesson quickly.
Yeah, exactly. My mom was a teacher, and my dad was like not really in the picture when I was younger. So I don't know where, you know, I did get very much into art, and I studied art in undergraduate, art and sociology. From very early age, I was always drawing and stuff like that. So I think it eventually emerged. And I think if I had grown up somewhere where there was like architecture had more of a presence, I would have discovered it, but it just wasn't.
Maybe you'd really be a good architect today.
Yeah, exactly. Ooh, totally. Yeah.
He still hasn't forgiven you for leaving him.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. Sensitive.
Well, I feel like even, you know, you, this is going to be, I think you guys might be the 70th episode, but like,
wow. Wow, nice.
Something around there. But there's very few people, I'd say, who had an understanding of what architecture was early on. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not
interesting. Interesting.
You might know that one architect or something, and maybe see something, but
yeah.
So then how did architecture come into the picture? What did you do for undergrad?
So yeah, I studied drawing and sculpture and sociology at the small liberal arts school in Pacific Northwest in Portland. That was great. And I, you know, after leaving that, I was like, oh, I'm going to be an artist and it's all going to work out.
I was like, what is that? What are they telling you is going to happen after that degree? Yeah,
yeah, exactly. Yeah, some questionable choices. I got like a show in Portland and was like working as an artist and, you know.
Portland, Maine?
Portland, Oregon.
Oregon.
Yeah,
okay.
Sorry. So I was out there and, I was filling it in with various jobs. Some of them were construction. And so those two things just kind of kept going. And I actually found my way out to Boston. So I was working at the ICA in Boston, the art museum there. And building installations. And
in the new building?
It was actually both. So it was like just as we were still in the old building. So I was working there and then basically transitioned to the new building. And then, so during that time, yeah, I was like still doing art, but building stuff. You know, I saw An Inconvenient Truth, Al Gore's movie, and I was like, well, shit, these buildings are terrible. Like, somebody should do something, you know? And so I kind of thought that it would might, you know, blend all these different things that I was working on, and yeah, applied to schools and went from there.
So then, yeah, Steve, you're growing up in Maine, you're living out in the wilderness 6 days a week, coming back once. No. Yeah, what are you growing up around? What's life like?
I grew up with a healthy disrespect for architects. I was like, my dad was a math professor, but he moved to the town I grew up in, not with a job. And so to like make ends meet, he was buying old, like really crappy farmhouses and like flipping them. But he wouldn't call it flipping them, renovating and selling in like super on the cheap. You buy a house for like $5,000. They literally bought the house I grew up in for $7,000.
Wow.
And so, but these just absolutely marvelous New England farmhouses. Like to this day, there's not a kind of architecture that speaks to me more than these. Like the house I grew up in, it's, you know, these kind of sagging roofs, but perfect proportions, just
like a kind of like salt box kind of they're just form, or
I mean, my dad calls it a cape, but just like, you know, a classic gable, simple form. There's always like a classic 2-story gable, a 1-story kitchen, and then a link, and then a barn. And it's a pretty, you know, there's like mix and match on that formula, but they're like a long lost friend, you know, these old houses that just have so much soul and character, and they're made by hand, and they have like 2-foot wide boards wainscoting. Like there's no, very little drywall. Never, there wouldn't have been drywall originally. The house I grew up in, my dad had renovated, and it had, you know, drywall ceilings between these hand hewn beams. And the one I grew up in was built by a farmer, not a builder. So it's like, wasn't built very well, but it still has this like, they just did it so pragmatically and beautifully. And it's just like so well situated in the land that, as a kid, I remember really disliking modern architecture. But I was around that like experience of building, and my dad was always fixing up the house or working on a workhouse until he got a full-time job and wasn't doing that as often. But so I thought I would maybe want to be a builder when I was growing up. Somebody suggested, I was like in an art class, they're like, you should be an architect. And I was like, architect? Like, I want to be one of them.
Yeah. I mean, that was like a big statement of saying, like, I grew up like disdaining architects, but it wasn't like you came in contact with any architect.
No.
It wasn't like somebody like an architect built a house next to you, or like tore down your home and built something
right,
new.
Right.
But it was sort of more of the, like, I guess if you were growing up and looking at what sort of avant-garde architecture was, that's where you were.
So foreign. Well, and then the new houses that were getting built, they weren't really architected. They were just like new, really, in rural Maine, pretty crappy.
Right.
So, no offense, Mainers. but at the time, you know, like, there's just
going to lose that whole audience.
Yeah, exactly. We already lost on the TV.
Yeah.
So that wasn't really something that was interesting, but I think construction or engineering, I ended up wanting to be an engineer, and went to college in Connecticut and I was a physics major because that's sort of like, I really just liked figuring things out and understanding how stuff worked, and I didn't know what I wanted to be, but understanding how the world worked seemed great. So I ended up doing that, and then while I was there, I took a class in architecture because it seemed like the best way to get my arts credit that I needed, my one required like humanities and arts thing. And I really liked it, and I really liked building models, especially. I remember my projects were horribly uncreative, but
just gables over and over.
Yeah,
exactly.
Just only
everywhere.
I remember we had like the build a cardboard chair assignment, and I built like this
gable
old wingback chair that you would like from like a smoking lounge from the 20s or something. And it was like so not well designed, but it was really robust.
Just like those beams in your house.
Exactly. Yeah. Same idea.
Farmer's chair. Yeah.
But my professor suggested at the end of that, she was like, well, like I got a B or something. She's like, but you're really good at making models. Like I could probably get you an internship as a model maker.
Hmm.
I was like, oh my God, I could get paid to do that? That I can't think of a more fun thing.
She's like, kind of.
Paid is a stretch.
Yeah.
And I was just like, it was just like, okay, that's what I'm going to do for this year after I graduate. Well, I figure out what I'm going to do. Not that I want to, because I knew I didn't want to do physics. It was just like too myopic. Like,
how far into physics did you get?
I have a Bachelor of Arts, so it's like pretty light duty. I mean, it was really stinking hard. It was very challenging mental work, but I never was an expert in any one thing, but I did know that I didn't want to be an expert in any one part of physics. It's just like, again, it's too zoomed in. So being a model maker sounded great. So I was like, okay, cool. Like I'm ready for that connection. I'll take that job. And she was like, all right, it's for this company called Caesar Pelli, and they're in New Haven.
Really?
And I was like, I will never live in New Haven. Never. I'm a painter. And I was like, I've read all these like Western stories. Like I used to love reading Western novels.
In Maine is Connecticut West?
Connecticut was not West.
In the West of Connecticut.
Wild, wild West. New Haven was not checking that box. So I had a friend that lived in Colorado, that I decided I would like go stay with her for the summer and just live in Colorado, and I would get that model making job. So I like when I graduated from college, I remember I went on this road trip with my girlfriend at the time, and I drove to like every single town in the greater West, from Oregon to Montana, Idaho, Colorado, and applied for jobs in all the towns that I thought I could want to live in. And everyone basically laughed me away. They're like,
As a model maker. did you take the job with Caesar Pelli?
No.
No, so you don't even have that.
I never went to Connecticut.
Just the chair. Just the model of the chair.
Yeah. Just hauling his massive heavy chair around in the back of his truck.
I had this like horribly crappy portfolio that I worked on forever. And it was like I had physical pieces of paper in it. And yeah, like there was a couple, I almost got a job offer at a couple places. Where they were like, well, we need an office manager.
Can you take out the trash?
Yeah. But I did end up, I had lived for a summer in Durango before I graduated. So I ended up back in Durango. I was like, I guess I'll work for the construction company I worked for there again.
Hmm.
But I called all the architects in the phone book there for out of, like, why not? One last try. And I actually, the last phone number in the book Wasn't the last one, but I like missed the second one. Got back to it. He ended up like somebody had quit, given him his 2 week notice. He needed somebody cheap, so he hired me. And I was able to, he did not hire me as a model maker. So that is how I ended up as an architect.
And that's how I'm here.
Yeah, exactly. Great guy. Firm is great.
Who was it?
It was bad timing for him and good timing for me. it's Brookie Architecture and Planning.
Okay.
Dean Brookie out in Durango. Huh. So it was like really an awesome experience. I felt so lucky to be part of being an architect, knowing that I had no right to be. And
Do you have more sympathy for those portfolios that come in now that just have one chair and like
they're all better than framing? All better than mine. Yeah, it's amazing that actually I do have that experience sometimes, especially like in the first couple of years when I would see resumes to work for Shape and being like, wow, these are all way better than my resume ever was, or my portfolio. Like, and these people are having a hard time getting a job. They want to work for us? Like,
yeah. Well, it's funny, at least you're saying that you knew you didn't quite deserve to be there. Like, I've had an experience, like, where I did 7 years of architecture school and then was working in Mexico City for Tatiana Babau. And surprisingly, somebody, like, there's a high school student who only applied to Harvard, didn't get in, needed something to do over the summer, and had a friend of a friend at her office. And so she came into work. And I'm sitting there after like two master's degrees, yeah, and I'm cutting foam, like making models. Yeah. And she's doing the same thing next to me. And she there's one thing where she was doing something in CAD. I guess she knew CAD. And she was like, how do I print this like at quarter scale or whatever? And I was like, I don't know. Like I have to figure it out every time. I have Revit. Yeah. Why do I need that? And she was like, "Oh, like see what an Ivy League degree does for you or something." And I was like, "What am I doing with my life?" She's doing the exact same thing as me at this high school. Yeah. So, yeah. But she did end up going to the AA, and like I think she's a really good architect now. But so,
okay. I taught her everything. Yeah,
she's right. A little better. Yeah.
Hey, we're happy to be sponsored by Modern in Denver Magazine. For over a decade, they've been crafting fantastically curated content on Colorado designers and projects, spreading the gospel of good design within our region.
And I love how the goal of Modern in Denver aligns with the goal of this podcast, to better build up and connect the community of Colorado designers. So go buy a copy of the magazine at your local bookstand, subscribe to their weekly email list, and follow them on Instagram.
Check it out.
But so you were both sort of like, that's funny, coming at it from different ways and then sort of hovering around architecture. So then Morgan, what when you decided to go to grad school, where'd you go and sort of what pushed you in that way?
Yeah, you know, I applied to a couple different schools and ended up going to the University of Oregon in Eugene. Mm-hmm. Just mainly because of the sustainability focus. And I was like, this is what I, you know, was really passionate about at the time. So, ended up there and it was awesome. I had a really great experience. I was working for this guy named Gary Moy, you know, during the semester, some of the semesters and over the summers. And he had worked in Louis Kahn's office for a long time. So he was like, you know, very old school. And, you know, he would just like, you know, you'd like bring him your drawing and he would just like crumple it up and, you know, he'd leave me like newspaper articles at the end of the day that I'd have to go home and use graph paper and like write out the articles. And
are you serious?
So yeah, it was really, and I was like, you know,
like to practice your lettering or
yes, to practice my lettering. Wow. You know? So I was using like programs at school during the day and then like doing this, you know, during summers and nights or whatever, days off. And you know, at first I was like, wow, this is intense, you know, but then like some of the other professors would come into our office and that they were doing projects on and like, you know, Gary kind of treated them the same way. So, you know, and it was like, all right, so maybe this isn't so bad. And the economy was terrible. So I was like, whatever, I have a job, like I'll, you know, and so, yeah, it was great. I learned like actually how to draft actual line weights and pencils and, you know, it was a great, great position. And then, yeah, I was also able to teach pretty much every semester while I was there, which was great. Grad school cost me almost nothing and had amazing experiences teaching with undergrads and studio experience, and yeah, it was
slept a ton, just
totally, money. Totally, yeah, yeah, yeah. So never, easy. Never broke out in hives ever, yeah, never, it was awesome.
Never cried in the bathroom,
yeah, exactly, totally.
He lived with the some of the women's rugby team.
Yes,
so, yeah, keeps getting better. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. Wow. We had this fantastic house of like these. They were all like undergrad architecture students, but also on the rugby team, and they were just a blast. One of them works in Steamboat now, and I'm still friends with her. We just saw her at the AIA conference.
Oh, cool!
Which is so fun to run into her. But yeah, it was like college part deux kind of for me, you know, it was just like great being around in this bigger university and. Yeah, just really, really good time.
So I feel like you came into grad school with maybe some big expectations of, especially on the like sustainability front.
For sure.
And I feel like, and I want to dive into this with you guys, but you know, people will say like, yeah, like I want to be a sustainable architect or I want to do this. And it's very hard to actually dive into that in a certain way or find that school that really does it right.
For
and,
sure.
And like figuring out how much architects can really do.
Totally.
So were you surprised? Well, did you get out of Oregon what you thought you would? Or
I did actually.
How were you surprised?
Yeah, I mean, I didn't have a lot to compare it to, obviously, in terms of like other like architectural education experiences at that point. But yeah, no, I mean, I was working in like the energy studies building laboratory that was on campus. Mm. And, you know, there was like all these like very well-known, you know, kind of sustainability experts that were around and taking classes with them. My thesis project was with Miller Hall and working on the Bullitt Center in Seattle, which was like a living building. Which was like, yeah, I mean, that was really disheartening and also very inspiring at the same time. Just because it was it's the standard is so challenging, and to see these like amazing architects working on it and us also supporting it from the energy modeling side, but also from the design side. You know, it was, I think I glimpsed at how like exactly what you're talking about, like just how challenging it is to navigate that. But I think it prepared me probably better than a lot of other places in terms of like pursuing sustainability in architecture.
Right. And then Steve, so then you're hanging out in Durango, chilling as a fake architect underground. When?
Pretty much.
What's next for you? How long do you stay there, and then what?
Well,
kicked you out.
So that was interesting because it was great. I loved living in Durango. I was learning so much. I was actually using ArchiCAD, which is interesting because it's what we use now.
Right.
Randomly. But I had moved there with a friend group out of college. And one of those friends is Morgan's wife. So I was friends with her in undergrad. And then we were like, she was working as a natural builder and doing Adobe construction. And my buddy was a geologist. Hmm. He was doing carpentry or something. His girlfriend. And then whatever, I think Kathleen actually got a job in Telluride. And then I was at the same time, this guy that I worked with, like he was like a contract worker for Dean Brookie for a little bit. He was like, oh, I just talked to this company in Telluride. You've got to go talk to this one. And he's like so cool doing like these amazing projects. It would be like such an opportunity. And he's like, and I can get you an interview. And I was like, that's interesting. This is coming up at the same time as like Austin also wanted to move to Telluride. And so we ended up like, I was like, oh, I'll talk to him. And so I ended up having this like amazing conversation with Tommy Hine. It was very philosophical. I remember like, I don't remember the conversation specifically, but I just came away so inspired and decided to move to Telluride. So after about a year in Durango, I ended up living in Telluride for like 4 years.
Hmm.
And actually through Kathleen.
And he also didn't need for you to have an architecture degree.
It was amazing. Like I had worked for a year and was gotten pretty like savvy with the software and was able to like do good elevations, you know, and I could do a wall section. Like,
right, yeah.
I think I was a pretty smart hire, and it's really hard to hire people in these mountain towns. Like who lives there that's an architect that can do stuff?
Right.
And I think he had a bunch of actually pretty qualified people working for him, but just like a draftsperson, that was like a pretty good commodity for him. I was
right,
like,
yeah.
I will be your draftsman,
yeah.
You know? And he was that kind of, Tommy Hine he's a very highly talented architect, like really, but one of those more like figurehead type practices where it worked, it was a great relationship. he would come to me with a sketch and I would draft that up. And it was like, I could understand where he was trying to say and what his ideas were. And like, so I ended up moving up there, worked for him for 4-5 years. And I kept thinking like, this will be a year and then I'll go figure out what I want to do. But like, as I kept progressing, it was like getting to be more and more rewarding to be an architect. And right. I was like, okay, I guess this is maybe this is what I'm going to do. Met my wife there. She ended up also working for, actually, she was like, we were in this friend group. She was actually, I think I met Kathleen, was friends with her before she moved to town. And then we ended up living together in this roommate situation. And she got the office manager job for Tommy. And after a few years, we both independently decided to, that it would be a good idea to buy a house. And we weren't even dating at the time, but we did end up deciding to buy a house in Ophir, which is like a valley over from Telluride, way cheaper. In the early 2000s, it was affordable-ish. Between the two of us, like pooling reserves, we were able to do that. And and what was cool about Tommy is I gave him my notice and he was like, no, don't leave. And I was like, okay, I'll work half time. So I worked for 2 weeks for Tommy. And then 2 weeks at a time, my buddy Austin and I renovated the house. So we ended up like tearing every single stud out, redid all the wiring, redid the west wall. We like took it out completely. It was this old log house built by miners in the 60s. Rebuilt it. There was like no insulation for the first winter, so we just like made a lot of fires and drank a lot of whiskey, hot toddies.
So why'd you ever leave?
Yeah, exactly. We were living the dream. I think Stacy actually ended up like initiating and being like, I want to go back to grad school. She was interested in architecture, so she did the summer program at Columbia, and then decided she didn't want to do architecture and that she would want to do planning instead. So she was like, I'm going to apply for grad school. I was like, I guess I should get a degree in this too, having like, I can't even apply, I can't even get licensed, right? Because I didn't even have an undergrad. So I applied all over the country, and we figured we'd sell the house when we finished it and go to grad school, and like help it. It would help us pay for our school. The selling the house thing didn't work because it was 2008,
and it still didn't have a west wall.
Yeah, exactly. Totally.
West wall came out great. there was a little more insulation in it too, but the economy wasn't good. It was like right when they crashed.
2008.
Yeah. So it was a great time to go back to grad school.
Yeah.
It was perfect timing. Right. Because I just like, I had applied to schools, I'd gotten in here and there, ended up deciding to go to Parsons in New York. Henry Smith Miller was the interim, what is it called, like program director. And he like convinced me. I was like, no, I don't want to go to New York. I only applied to New York because my wife had applied somewhere in New York. And then didn't want to, like that didn't, she didn't want to go there. So I was like, I'm not going to consider that. I'm like a Mainer. but he called me up.
It's very
and
specific.
He was like, yeah. No, you should come here because this is like this melting pot. This is like New York City is where it's happening. And he like lied to me. He said I had a lot of potential. It's like, I see you're a self-made man. Like, you got to come here. I don't know what he was thinking, but I did end up deciding that was going to be more interesting. It's the path less traveled for me.
There you go. Well, I don't have a great understanding about Parsons of like what
is it?
What is it, and like what drew you there, and what did you get out of it? You know,
I applied there because they had a really great design build program, and I thought it was like, I went around and there were still all these programs that were like a little too artsy for me, and I was like this pragmatic kind of guy, physics major. You know, and I like really thought I would want to go to like MIT, and I remember seeing models there and being like, I do not understand this, and or Columbia,
and I know physics,
yeah,
right, exactly,
exactly.
That's why I don't understand it.
Yeah, I think I was like, I'm working as an architect, I'm going to be able to get in, and then I got into pretty good schools, but I had no like artistic abilities.
It was actually all just elevations.
Just pretty much.
Yeah, I remember
in that chair.
Yeah. Yeah.
I remember working on my portfolio and I was really proud of it, and I was like putting in plans and elevations of these projects, and this guy who I worked with like was like, oh, can I see? And he looked at me and he was like, you're not going to get into school. And we're like due in like 2 days. And he's like, no, 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 you need to start over. You need an idea here. You need to show like your own ideas, like not just your bosses. Like you need to have some graphics to this. And I'm just like, oop, oop, oop. And I was like, shit, this is due. And he's like, okay, well, I'm going to give you my computer that has Illustrator on it. You're not going to use like Word. And you're going to start over. And here's an example. He gave me like a he was like, here's a few examples of portfolios. And I started over and like worked overnight for a couple of days. And I got into like half the programs, which would have been zero. So thank God for that. But yeah, no, Parsons is like, I think it's like a great, it's like all of the professors are practicing architects in New York. Hmm. And they're really some great names, like LTL is there, Levin Betts, you know, Renfro was there for a little while, Ray Slipka. So I was attracted to like having that like level of caliber, but also they're all practicing and they're really about like not just they want to push your ideation, and there's some conceptual rigor, but there's like not I felt like it was this great balance. And because they had this like design build program, I could tell that I didn't know that I needed to do it. I like did my own design build program already, but it was a value to them, which right. made it sort of feel like aligned with what I wanted to do. Yeah. So that's, and I think when I went out there to check it out, that was kind of confirmed for me. And I would say it did. It was those things. And I'm really glad I chose to go there, which was kind of like barely ended up deciding to do that. But it was a good time there as well in terms of like who was coming through.
Right. There's just so many schools out there, and they can influence you so strongly.
It's crazy. Yeah,
and it's crazy where you drop and how it molds you. But so then, Morgan, you graduated with all these ideas of sustainability and psychology and art. And where did that lead you? What did you do after that?
Kind of like a street corner in Portland, Portland, Oregon,
with
like
the rest of the architects.
Yes,
that graduated.
Exactly. Yeah. Oh, yeah. But yeah, 2010, which was like, yeah, super awesome time to try to get a job.
Can I stay in school another year?
Yeah, exactly. It wasn't 2008.
Yeah. Well, no, that was.
I graduated in 2009. Graduated, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So yeah, similar time.
The bottom. Yeah.
Yeah, no, I know. They were like, you've got to get out of here. So that was unfortunate. Yeah, so I spent, you know, a couple months in Portland looking for work and like, you know, had these fun interviews and they were like, portfolio looks great. Like, you know. Mm. If the world wasn't ending, we'd totally hire you. So yeah, you know, it was definitely a tough time, just financially and, you know, psychologically, like coming out of graduating and all that kind of momentum. And but luckily I did have a buddy who got a job in Portland, Maine.
The other Portland.
Yeah. And so he actually like kind of hooked me up with a firm there. Kaplan Thompson Architects is like a smaller firm out of Portland, and they were actually looking for someone. And and there's not that many people in Maine, so you know they were like cast a wide net, and
they had one architect leave.
And yeah, exactly, totally. I obviously talked with them, and then decided to move cross country for that job because I was like, I think it's one of the only jobs right now. So, but yeah, it actually, you know, they had a really great focus on sustainability. One of the two principals was also from University of Oregon, and they were really trying to push Passive House on the the East Coast in New England, and were doing like, you know, really pretty progressive things that I could see from other firms, you know, at that time. And yeah, so I was there for 4 years, and it was a great experience. I learned a ton. You know, we did one of the first Passive House schools in the country, which I got to be part of. Yeah, I was like one of the project leads on that. You know, we're doing like multifamily Passive House and single family stuff. So obviously I didn't know it at the time, and I never set out to like start my own firm. You know, back then I was just like so psyched to have a job and just wanted to like learn. But it was a very similar kind of structure to our firm now in a lot of weird ways. And you know, so we were, yeah, there's that balance of doing like single family and doing stuff that was like a little bit more exploratory and out on the design edge, and then also like trying to get very rigorous about, you know, multifamily, and but also pushing sustainability bounds with like boundaries with like schools and stuff like that. So I've felt super lucky to be there for almost 4 years.
So then when did you start your own firm?
Yeah.
After that?
Yeah, so that was like 2014, I think. I came out, my wife, who is spent a lot of time in Colorado, was like, we need to get back to Colorado. I can't take Maine anymore. It sucks.
Yeah, there goes well, the other Maine.
Yeah, right? Like, it's your friend right there. Yeah,
yeah, totally. So we moved back, and you know, I was starting to looking around for jobs, and the economy was decent, but I couldn't really find any firms that intrigued me that much.
Where was it? Here in Denver?
In Denver, okay. Yeah, in Denver. And then I had a friend from undergrad, this guy, Noah Manos, who's still a great friend of mine. We started a design build company because I was just like, you know, I've been in an office for 4 years, just head down, super, you know, super deep in passive house and design. And, you know, he was able to buy a property actually just a couple blocks from here, Five Points. And we kind of kicked off this design build business. So we, you know, we demoed the property, and he basically gave me a lot of free rein to design this high performance single family home on this corner lot in Five Points. So I owe a lot to him, and he had a really great network here. You know, like friends with a lot of old like Denver folks, natives, and you know, I heard Christian Butler was on here, and he was like one of the first guys I met through Noah landing in Denver. So yeah, it was a very different experience. You know, doing the design build. We would like,
what was that firm called?
That was called Paper Airplane.
Oh, okay.
And
yeah,
it
yeah,
still
yeah.
exists.
So, yeah.
And Noah's really kind of taken it on. And
is he in like Kansas City now?
Yeah, something? He's doing a project out there. Yeah, because okay. You're from Kansas too, right?
Yeah, I'm from Kansas, and I have a friend of a friend that keeps talking about him, and I'd run across you guys' work. Yeah, and then
So he's you know, that's, he's still running that business, and we've done some collaborations together with him over the years, but you know, we. This was pre-Steve, and so we started out, and you know, we were working on this house, and yeah, like it was just a very different experience. One day we rented this cherry picker, and we were trying to take down this tree on site, and like, you know, we're up 30 feet, and I've got like this big ass chainsaw, you know, like not the little electrical ones, the big ones, and like Noah's like holding my waist, and I'm like leaning out trying to get these branches, and there's like a little
redoing Titanic with the chainsaw. Yeah,
exactly, yeah. Totally. There's this little crowd like forming on the street, and like, you know, it was just like, wow, this is very different than 2 months ago when I was like sitting at my desk in a very quiet environment. But yeah, like I remember some of the neighbors like actually asked us to come over and cut branches for them, so we were like doing deals on the street
and business, yeah.
Yeah, and I was like, maybe we should just be like these arborists, yeah. And just throw away
the
like
best money I ever made.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Totally. It's cash money. So yeah, that was cool. It was, you know,
so you guys were like developing and financing it yourself, and this one project.
Yes, yeah. This one project. Yeah, I mean, it was mainly him just throwing everything into it that he had. And obviously, like, yeah, we were both out there, like, literally in the trenches, like, digging this foundation where there was a house, like, a foot away, you know, these tight Denver lots. And just, it was a pretty eye-opening experience for me. I think I walked away from that, and I was like, I don't know if I need to be doing this much build.
Was that a design build company.
Was that a duplex?
No, it was a single family, yeah.
But you did another duplex, yeah, that was sort of like two gable forms and wood clad wrapped around,
yep.
not with Shape, but with Paper Airplane?
No, that's the only other one I think is with Shape. Yeah, that was just a single family.
I thought there was another one or something. Okay.
Yeah. But yeah, that project turned out great. You know, it was like a record selling or whatever, and the people loved the house, and got some press from it too. And yeah, it was an overall great experience. And like, so from there, you know, we, again, Noah had this amazing network. So we were like working with all these Denverites on different projects, the, you know, Museum of Contemporary Art, doing stuff for them, and, you know, kind of all over the place. And so, yeah, it was a really nice kind of shifting gears, but I did start to miss architecture, you know.
Because you were still doing a lot of design work, but it was taking up a lot less of your time, I guess.
Yeah. Well, I mean, as you know, like, you know, it was just the construction side was like 75-80% of it. And
right.
It's just like, it's, yeah, they're just different beasts, and it's
and
really
they're like,
hard.
Hurry up. Come on.
Yeah, yeah,
have
exactly.
You designed it yet? Let's
totally,
go. Yeah.
Totally, totally. Yeah, it was really hard to manage. So, yeah, I think I just started kind of again, because of Noah, I really was starting to build this network of people in Denver and started taking on more kind of side design jobs. And yeah, it was just like a slow, like over a couple of years, it kind of phased out where I was just like, yeah, I've kind of got too much on my plate. I can't, like, you know, do the build side anymore.
Right. And so then you graduated with an architecture degree.
Yeah, actually, was it?
And then did you decide to go into some other career after that?
Well, my girlfriend at the time, Stacy, my wife, she went to grad school for urban planning in British Columbia. She went to UBC, which is very far, it turns out, from New York. And then that was a 2-year program. Mine was a 3-year program. So the last year of my program, she was working as an intern at first for this new city development project in Nigeria.
Yeah.
And
you can hear all her story on episode
something.
Totally. Yeah. But yeah.
So she was, it turns out, even harder to talk to when she lived in Nigeria than New York, than in Vancouver. It was like more than 3 time zones. And so I was doing Solar Decathlon, and when I was finishing, I graduated, I kept working on the Solar Decathlon. That competition was the following fall, August, September, whatever, October. And that was in DC when it was on the mall. So I was like head down, all in, design building, doing the construction, not burned out on it. It was awesome. So when that ended, I didn't really want to stay in New York, and I didn't have like a good anchor somewhere else. But I was also like, Stacy, you need to come back, or because I can't do long distance like one more year or whatever. Because sure, her employers kept wanting her to stay. Like, this is going really well. Like, please continue. So she basically said that, like, I'm quitting. My husband says I have to go back. And they were like, what does he do? And she was like, he's an architect. And they were like, he's hired. So I remember being like,
but I have a good portfolio now.
Exactly. No, it really still wasn't good.
It's ready.
Yeah. It was ready, but it wasn't good.
I know Illustrator now.
Yeah. So I was even better at making models. So I decided that would be cool. Like, I would give that a try. I went out to Nigeria and lived in the bush and worked on this. It was really cool because Stacy had spent a year doing this. If you didn't listen to episode 122, she had spent a year doing this master planning project. And it was the really cool concept that it was not this like top-down build this whole city from scratch. It was build seed projects, neighborhoods around economic incubators. So there was like a fish farm, a health center, a school, this like yam storage processing building, and then some worker housing. And like, they built the first thing that was built was a brick factory. So people would like employ people, because the whole problem is everybody leaves the rural areas and goes to the city, to Lagos, because there's no economic activity and they don't want to just be yam farmers that struggle, because everybody grows yams and sells them to each other at the same time. So having this like ability to have longer term storage for their harvests, and then having these other economic opportunities. And then sort of it was like all of this was financed by a Nigerian who was from that local community and was really interested, started out as like a nonprofit supporting education. So really cool vision. And they created this idea of a way to create this sort of urban agricultural community and then build it a little bit at a time using local labor. So that just sounded amazing. I was there and I got to help design like some of the workforce housing and some of the, like, I worked on the yam store building and the, and you know, that was like amazing. It was a crazy adventure, really cool, really interesting. So many layers though. Nigeria is just such a complicated and challenging place. There's just like such a corrupt like governance there that has these like trickle down effects throughout society. That's like, it was really, It was an experience in colonialism, you know, like even just being like half of our design team was, one was a Nigerian-American, one was Ghanaian-American, Nigerian, and then Stacy and I, and just having like 2 white people in that mix just really made, like, changed the dynamic. And then there were these Ghanaians that were the skilled labor force, because there was like a sort of culture of training in the trades in Ghana, but not Nigeria. So they brought in this crew that could, like, actually knew how to like foot rebar, you know? Mm-hmm. And so there was like all these interesting dynamics. In the end, I was thinking we would stay for a little over a year. We ended up leaving after like 9 months, right before the rainy season when the river floods
and can't make bricks.
So that's what like spit me out into the world. And that was cool, good timing, because that was 2011. There were some jobs again in New York, but not that many. But then Stacy really wanted to come back to New York because she actually got an opportunity to work for city planning there, which is as good of an opportunity as you can get as a city planner. And, you know, my stuff was in storage there, so that was as good a place to go.
I had to go back there anyway.
Yeah, totally. Exactly. Pick up my sleeping bag.
Yeah, all your stuff.
Move into the storage unit.
Right.
Yeah. It took a little while, but I did get a job for 1100 Architect there. It's just they're like very boutique firm, but they do both residential and commercial. And that was when I realized I really sucked. That's when I thought I was going to go get that first job, and I had 5 years of experience, and I did great in my program. I got all these like pats on the back, and then I was like, wow, I do not know what to do as a designer. And it was really good. Taste of humble pie. It was not the most pleasant year of my life, but I think that was the one where I figured out really what it takes to architect beyond like fancy single family homes in the mountains.
I had a sort of similar little experience when I was fairly soon out of undergrad and went to Liberia and did a master plan for development. And I remember being like, okay, yeah, I know how to draw, but like, I don't know how to build stuff here. I don't know, you know,
totally.
And like feeling like, okay, they're looking at me like the expert, and I've kind of sold myself as that, but like,
right. They're making stuff out of bricks,
right?
It's not
yeah, and I'm not, yeah. There's no old contractor or architect looking over my shoulder and telling me, you know, and had a bunch of those sort of weird experiences. Good. Experiences too, where it kind of builds me up, and then I've hit a few of those firms where I'm just like, oh shit, I don't know anything.
I don't know
of how to actually do stuff, and how humbling that can be. And
I was old too.
Right?
I was 28
when
I went back to grad school, which is like old for everybody there. Coming straight through or having 1 or 2 years off, and I had all this experience in AutoCAD. I was like, well, that makes me a real good architect, right? and then when I would have project managers who were like 5 years younger than me and like knew what was going on, I was really like, dang it. Why am I bad at this?
Well, it's like when you're talking about the sort of, I don't want to specialize in a thing of physics, right? Like that whole thing of, are you a generalist or a specialist?
Yeah.
And those people who are 10 years younger than you who've just been doing
office
shell core or whatever, you know, they
really
can humble
good
you
at it.
They,
for
yeah,
sure,
you
for
know,
sure,
and
yeah.
until you throw them some physics problems and see how they can. But so then how did you guys end up together then? Like, it seemed like your orbits were kind of spiraling
yeah,
around.
Yeah, we never met.
Yeah.
We still hadn't met at this point. I'd heard about Morgan through Kathleen. They grew up together. Yeah. So like being friends with Kathleen, like, I'd heard your name.
Heard your name.
So I was in New York, then I switched firms in New York, and then I finally, I was like, okay, I really need to move out of New York. It's a baller, amazing place, but I do need grass.
It's not Maine.
I need some.
Exactly. It'll never be Maine.
I need to be allowed to be barefoot sometimes. But at the same time, Stacy was like not into urban planning because it's very slow and she likes to make things happen. So decided to go back to grad school for landscape architecture. And then through a long series of little shortcuts to the chase, we ended up in Boston. She went to GSD and I was like, it was funny because everyone in New York, it's like the number one cultural thing is they teach you to hate Boston.
Yeah.
It's like the first thing you need to know is like to hate,
same thing
how
in
to
Boston.
Hate Boston.
Yeah.
Right. And then the second thing is to like ride the subways. After that, like whatever you want to do is fine. It's cool.
Let me see your card. Two check marks? Okay.
Yeah.
There you go.
So I was like, we actually decided, I was like, we can't move to Boston and have you go to Harvard. It's going to be the most miserable thing we could ever do. But when we ended up there, I was like, oh, it's all a lie. Like, it's actually a really great city. And Cambridge is really nice. And there's all these, like, lakes and the ocean. The beaches around there are amazing. Like,
no one
literally
has
world class.
Yeah, exactly. It turns out.
There's actually world class beaches all along the coast of Massachusetts that nobody knows about. Like, it's amazing. And then
2 weeks of the year, it's beautiful.
Yeah, beautiful. Yeah.
Well, I think for Maine, it was like actually a lot of weeks a year. It's like pretty nice. The falls, yeah. And and everybody's really nice. So it's like this, like people from all over the world are like just there because they're interested in some like subject. They're like so economic. It was so. We lived there while I was in grad school. I worked for MBA Architects. That was really great. But it was there in a FX Fowl in New York. I was like doing a lot of cultural work, and I was really liking that. So schools, libraries, museum. I got to work on the Statue of Liberty Museum in New York. I was just like loved doing that, especially after doing these like 14,000 square foot monster houses in Telluride that like just mean a lot of raping the world to like build, you know?
Right.
So like actually contributing, not trying to be too fancy, just making really valuable stuff. But then probably like Morgan's wife, my wife was like, okay, she's from Texas. We met in Colorado. Like we need to move back to where there's blue skies once in a while. And also she wanted to start a firm or have her own firm. And so the East Boston's just like the last place you should decide to do that, right? Where there's like all these brilliant, amazing people graduating every year. And so Colorado seemed like a pretty good, like her parents had moved here, her brother lives here. It was like, felt like home. It was a good potential for her career-wise. I didn't want to start my own firm. Lord knows.
Terrible idea.
But when we moved out here, I had a similar experience where I was just like kind of looking for, you know, I was like, what firm do I want to work for that's like, does more sustainability than what I've been doing? I was passive house certified, trained. I really wanted to do that. I was loving the like caliber of work we were doing, and I there's some amazing firms in Denver, but they weren't like checking both of those boxes.
Right.
But meanwhile, we'd been coming to Colorado to vacation with Stacey's family, and we would see Kathleen and Morgan mostly to hang out because my wife's brother's dog and their dog would like play. So
it's a whole thing.
So there's this whole dog. So we would like hang out, and every time Morgan was like. Or you being like, yeah, I started my firm and like I got this like ADU and some renovations, you know, and then the next year he's like, well, and I'm doing this passive house project and we're doing this like, you know, bed and breakfast. And then the next time I would come out, it was always like, wow, this is like, I'm kind of jealous. And so then when
don't be.
Yeah.
it's you're selling it. How it looks like from other people's
exactly,
perspective.
Exactly. Totally.
But
so we talked and then we were like, I was just, You seem like you needed somebody besides Griffin, and it just seemed like better to take a chance. Again, the off the beaten path, like might as well. Now I have this chance. Never going to come again. If Morgan turns out to be an asshole and it's no fun working on these ADUs, I can always go work for Anderson Mason Dale or somebody.
And our dogs are going to have fun.
But yeah.
Exactly. At least the dogs will be happy.
Yeah. So that's how we.
So when was that? When did you?
2018.
Yeah. Yep.
2018. And I love those sort of origin stories. So what? So you're like, okay, we're gonna start.
So he'd started Shape. Shape was like two or three years old.
Yeah.
It hired one person.
Yeah. So like he came on officially as an employee, and obviously like with more experience than
Morgan
me.
Was my first boss in Colorado.
But I think there was like an understanding that like it could be a potential partnership, you know, because I was looking, you know, I've always really liked kind of collaborating with folks, and like I never envisioned being like the person, you know, so, you know, I think that was kind of at the very beginning, that was like a potential there, which was exciting. And, you know, Noah and I had basically kind of gone our separate ways at that point just because our business models were so different. Yeah, so I think that was kind of an idea from the outset.
But that was nice where you were able to have that really solid portfolio piece, at least that one house that's like, this is what I believe in, this is what I can do, and it sold better. And that's such the hurdle for people, right? For young firms of having that kind of flagship thing. And so when he joined up was... I mean, I guess so that was 2 years, 3 years from that house. Was work picking up and sort
yes
of
and
that same
yeah, yes and no.
passive house? Like,
yeah, you know, like I think we were both really trying to like increase momentum around like the passive house chapter, you know, and the
especially,
Colorado Green Building Guild and the Colorado Renewable Energy Society and like all these things. And we're trying to like kind of push that, and that network was growing a lot stronger. You know, people were like moving here and starting other businesses like Emu, and other people that were like interested and had great experience and were bringing it into Denver, and kind of like helping that movement. So yeah, yes and no. Like there was, you know, we had a couple great projects and a couple not so great ones. Yeah.
It was great for me at first, because at first there was like none of the partnership stuff. I was just kind of working, and I got to have like the awesome projects, and Morgan was like running around trying to put the fires out on all the like crappy little remodels and additions. So
he's like, "Why don't you partner with me?"
Yeah. Why don't you stick around here, take this project? Yeah.
But you had done really great network building through the Passive House and like sustainability community. So we had the Netherland Passive House project and the Sunshine Canyon project, which you basically put on my plate because you thought would be capable of managing those.
Right.
Griffin was more like junior, and then that freed up your bandwidth. So I was like, I get to work on these sweet single family passive houses for people that are just like amazing clients that like care so much and drank the Kool-Aid, really want to do this really cool site. Like just really lucky that those projects were very much all the values, you know, it was like in these really complicated sites with beautiful views and integrating into the hillside and having and being meeting the passive house standard. So I was like just working intensely on those and a couple other projects. I think there was that one with Noah in town. But yeah, you had a lot of like, I could not believe how many little projects you were able to have on your plate, like ADUs and additions. And I was just, you know, coming from, I'd work for
starting
two and a half
firm,
years.
Yeah, exactly.
I'd work for 2 years on one school starting in DD, you know, and it got built and it was amazing. It was 45,000 square feet, but like, still, I was just like, wait, you're saying yes to another one of these?
Do you want to get paid this month?
Yeah, then exactly. Yes, totally. Yeah, in retrospect, I feel like I could have probably turned down a few of those crab beer jobs and been fine. But at the time, it was like...
Well, you never know, right?
Yeah, I mean, exactly.
It's such a balance of starting that.
Yeah.
Well, and it's our roots. Like, I do feel like, you know, we're doing an ADU now. We do them occasionally because they're, like, attached or they're on the same property. And, like, we've got one now that... It's just an ADU, and it's like really fun.
Yeah,
you know, they're like little jewel boxes.
Right,
they're so easy comparatively. At least we're not that far into it yet. Sometimes they get really hard, but like, I think I'm really glad that that's part of like what we do. You know, and it's like we don't just have to do bigger things.
Well, and those are so tricky, right? Because you want to be helping people. You want to be giving them the thing that they need and designing beautiful spaces and places. But then it's like, it's so hard to afford an architect fee on an ADU, much less get an ADU built for what prices are at right now.
Yeah, totally.
For sure.
And then you're only working for the certain people, right?
Yep.
Well, it does feel more like you're working for people like ourselves, right? Like, you know, it's sometimes you can rationalize it with the mortgage and then what the income was going to be and they already have.
Right.
And it does, I like that, you know, again, going back to the Telluride days, like I just could not relate to the clients. I'm this Mainer who likes to be barefoot and these fancy people are coming and doing these like 12,000 square foot things. It's just like, there's such a disconnect.
Right.
So what we do now, it feels like it's really come together, you know, cause I can imagine wanting to live in a 2,000 square foot new house that's basically net zero, like tiny energy bills and is, you know, it's like, they're not cheap, but going down to the ADU scale, it's like, those are people we can really relate to. And I think that's something that's part of our mission is like adding value to people's lives that need it.
Right.
And we're doing that. It's like very, very easy to see. And then again, there's so much faster to work on. It's like, okay, it could look like this. Yeah, it looks great. Like,
well, it does feel like you guys are carving out a really nice niche of, I think being able to label it as a sort of you being a passive house expert, you know, like a lot of firms can say, okay, yeah, we're in sustainable design and what does that mean, right?
Yeah.
But be able to sort of have that metrics and then when someone's Googling passive house architect, you guys are starting
hopefully
to establish that, right?
Yeah,
yeah, hopefully, right? But where it is, it is so hard to sort of compete. Us small residential firms are competing for this 1% or the 1%, and and with all these other established firms, but where you're able to carve out that thing that you believe in a little bit better. I think for people who don't know, give us a little overview of Passive House and what are the sort of principles there. You have that like tattooed on your forearm.
Well, so Passive House is like, it's funny because we try not to use the word too much, but it's kind of hard not to. It's basically like a building science. Mm-hmm. It is a building science that has numbers that a building, performance metric numbers that buildings can hit to reduce energy. It's an energy-focused standard. Reduce energy from a typical building by 90%, from a current code building by 60 to 70% on heating energy, heating and cooling. And that's a pretty obvious motivator, right? And it's really simple, but there's like five pathways, which are one, duh, insulation, like double code basically, walls, roofs, and floors. Very simple. Continuity though is key, and that's what gets missed in like the next architect's house, is that you can't have anything, no thermal bridges. So that's link number two. No like steel beams going from the inside to the outside. Sorry, Olson Kundig, but those things are like 1,000 times more energy loss than is allowable. Just one. So making sure that we're just detailing really carefully and cleverly, and that we're integrating that with a structural engineer and checking it. So we're modeling, checking. Three is orientation and windows. It's really just like the windows are part of the heating system. Mm-hmm. A full 30%, a third of the heat energy for the house should come from the windows. The other third is from you and our bodies and our dogs and cats and electronics. And then only a third is from the heating and cooling system. That's how low we're getting. And the windows have to be facing the right way, and then they have to be properly shaded so we're not overheating in the summer. All that stuff you learn in grad school. And then four is airtightness. And that's probably like the best bang for buck of all the things, is just detail the crap out of it and make sure that it's continuous and that it's wicked airtight. And that makes, like, obviously if cold air comes in through the wall, it's gonna get cold inside. So we just do that. And that's something that we like don't take out of our projects, you know, if we're not trying to hit Passive House. But that has to be coupled with continuous mechanical, like energy recovery ventilation. So that just has to be, you have to run fresh air into the house continuously, recover the lost heat as the air is exchanged with the outdoor. And it makes for like an exceptionally comfortable indoor environment, and it's way healthier. I mean, once you like do this, you're just like, oh my gosh, there's mold in all of the houses that have been built since the 80s. Like literally, there's mold in the walls because there's a suction through the walls of moist outdoor air or moist indoor air, air going out and just getting trapped in these walls. So detailing that out, you know, it's like the energy savings is like the least important thing that's great about it. And so again, once we like have been trained in it and do the math and see the results and experience it, it's like really hard not to bring that to every project, even when we don't bother certifying. And we've done enough now that we don't have to do the energy modeling necessarily to like achieve some of the goals, although it's still very important. I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah, and mechanical ventilation, I think, was the fifth one. It was an important lungs. Part of it. But yeah. So I went to the conference in 2010 in Portland, Oregon, and it was like I saw builders and engineers and architects all sitting next to each other, and I'd never seen that before. And so like I was like, oh, what is this, you know? And you know, just the simplicity of it compared to other standards, I think has been really appealing, both from on the design side, but also, you know, the airtightness level that has to be hit with the standard is like a real challenge for builders. And so if there's builders that aren't interested in doing that, like that's kind of a sign in terms of like
it's not gonna work.
Their, you know, their level of quality, their interests around green building, whatever it is. But the right builders get really excited about it. And so they're like, this is a challenge, you know, this is something that they can like get excited about. And, you know, it's a lot different than asking a general contractor to get on board with like a LEED certification or whatever. They really get involved, and like we think that's a pretty cool
it's
part of it.
It's not more paperwork. But they get to be like, my building is more airtight than yours. And it's really like, you look on like Passive House Instagram and it's like, 0.23 seconds.
Exactly. You're like, damn, that's actually really hard to do.
Such nerds. But it is kind of like, I mean, again, as a physics major, it's like great to have found this like thing where I get to kind of, like, we don't do physics, but I can really even be like, oh, thermodynamics is like like, obviously it's pretty basic science. Like, let's use that.
Right.
And, like, let's understand what that means.
And where there's real metrics that you can really be going towards and testing and improving and
super simple numbers. Like, you get this much energy per square foot per year.
Yeah.
Boom. Hit it. And I mean, it's not easy, and we can't say it's free. But the idea too is, like, you put your money into the envelope and you actually can there are many, many cases, and there's a certain scale where it happens where you actually do take it out of the mechanical system. So, you know, like, we get to these value engineering things and we're like, whoa, 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 don't forget, if we take all this, like, extra insulation out, you're just going to pay for an extra air handler. Like, you're going to, there's real savings, actual savings there. And then when you compound that over time with the energy costs, and everybody forgets the energy costs are going up and will continue to, like, when we start to include that, that's where it's a much more affordable standard than, like, LEED, where you just the consultant fees are crazy.
Right.
And then what do you get? Like, there's not a real, like, clear, okay, if I save, you know, if your energy bill is $500 a month for 12 months, like, if we take 70% off of that, like, that's pretty good money that you're going to put in your pocket that you can put to a mortgage or you can put to.
Right. Mm-hmm. No, it's inspiring, and it's I start getting inspired and, like, okay, I'm going to take some courses, and I'm like, oh, I have too much shit to do.
Yeah. Like, don't stop hosting
hard,
this.
Man.
This
is, but I think, you know, talking about, not talking about hard, but you know, you graciously invited me into the office on one occasion for, like, a happy hour
kind
of charrette thing, and I really enjoyed it. You know, it's funny, you both saying not really wanting to start a firm, but then you have a firm and you have how many employees now, right? You have
there's nine of us.
Nine. Still, I mean, that's a good sized kind of place. I mean, so thinking about shape and sort of, like, this place in this environment, in this work environment that you're building and directing forward, what are sort of some of the biggest challenges, and what are the things that you're most excited about kind of projecting forward?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's lots of challenges every single day, always, no matter what.
It's just like grad school. It's really easy.
Exactly.
Totally. Grad school at Oregon.
Maybe tomorrow will be better. You know, as a growing firm, we're taking on more complex projects, and we're bringing together people that have worked on complex projects before, but not necessarily in the roles that they're in now. Mm. You know, so the team member is now the project manager, and the project manager is now the principal, and so it's kind of figuring out those roles and maintaining the quality, I think, that we've tried to include in a lot of our smaller projects in some of these bigger projects.
And stepping up the quality in a large way that we have to.
Right.
That you just have to do higher quality work as you get more expensive projects. And it gets harder exponentially.
Does that come from you guys, or is that you have to hire for that? You know, it's like, I have a certain level of experience and knowledge and quality that I have, right? And it grows slowly as you go, but.
Totally.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting, like, we're doing this farm park right now, and, like, so Morgan's done a couple of schools, a library, I've done, you know, museum schools, like, we have all this experience on really complicated commercial projects, but this project is this, like, we're doing this welcome building for a farm park that's in Aurora. It's very exciting, cool, sustainable, so it's going to be net positive, has a greenhouse, has a green roof, which we've never done before.
And a greenhouse.
It has this really cool superstructure that's, like, steel, that's, like, really carefully calibrated with, I mean, I've done a steel structure before, but the way this one's exposed, that's new. Really tight mechanical systems and this cool millwork. You know, it's net, and, like, having this PV array that's like watertight. So it's super exciting. It's great. And I think we are figuring out. Those drawings are coming together, but it's like, I think that's like where we're, every day is a challenge and we're stepping up and things are, that's why we're like architects, right? We get to learn something hard and exciting every day.
I think other firms too, maybe our size, if there's partnerships involved, like, you know, Steve takes this project, Morgan takes this project, and, like, I think we both have, like, FOMO over that. And so we're always kind of, like, stepping in and, you know, like, stepping on each other's projects in the best possible way. I think we both really appreciate that. It tends to muddy the water in terms of, like, a traditional kind of, like, process, like, in terms of, like, a hierarchy.
Yep.
But, you know, we...
Makes it better.
we feel historically it's, yeah, it's kind of brings something to the project, but yeah, it's not the best business model.
Yeah, I mean,
but it's so, I think it is because we care about quality of design, and
that's
like,
it, yeah.
it's just like you can't take that out, you know, and I appreciate that so much about our partnership. I think like the best way to collaborate sometimes is to just like open somebody else's work, and like you have to have a real level of trust,
right?
So like for sure. Morgan to open right. my project without my asking and change it, like I love that. I can't say how much I appreciate it. Every time it makes things better, and if it doesn't, I'm just like, no, you know, and like
revert.
Yeah,
like yeah, exactly.
Opening
totally.
The just, save
yeah.
as.
Right.
Yeah, yeah. It's not like taking someone else's project and taking it to the client. It's more just like, hey, I have this idea, you know, take it or leave it. But I do think it's
like,
a good
think
idea.
About this thing.
Or, yeah, yeah.
And it's like, so yeah, that does not make a more efficient process. But I think like what we care about and what we need desperately is all our projects to be as like amazing and well conceived as possible.
Right. And it really just, it comes down, I think, to that personality and to that trust and that,
yeah,
you know,
for sure.
How many architects did you meet and your dogs happened to run into each other one day? And
right.
but you know, it's true, right? Of
yeah.
like, it's a big thing to partner up with somebody
yeah.
and to be able to get that right, especially when you're sort of in the same kind of lanes and skill sets, it seems like
yeah.
you guys.
For sure.
But glad it's working out.
I mean, yeah. This was this whole other saga, but so Morgan started the firm, I joined, and then 9 months later, Morgan quit.
Oh, right. Yeah, yeah. We're back to the beginning, yeah.
Yeah.
Thanks a lot.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
Morgan moved out to Washington. I should let you tell your part of that.
Tell your side of it.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was kind of like a family decision / crisis that we just needed to get out of the Front Range of Colorado, and we're both kind of more rural folk in some sense. So I got this random job opportunity out in Washington State in this little valley called the Metau Valley. And yeah, it seemed like Steve was doing a great job. So I was just like,
he's got this.
You got this. And yeah.
You got that golden parachute. You just bought him out for all
exactly,
our money,
totally. Yeah. He gave me $2 and I said, yeah, yep, you got it.
More than I asked for.
Yeah. 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 Yeah, so it was definitely a big move. And you know, I felt pretty bad about it from time to time. But we felt like we had to do it for our family and just get in a different situation. And I have family out there. And so, yeah, so I was there, almost there, out there for almost 2 years working for a firm called Prentice Bounce Wickline. And that's when I had one of those moments that we were talking about when I was like, I've worked at a good firm. I've had my own firm. Like, I pretty much know everything, you know. And they were just like, you can't design shit. They really put me in my place.
Huh.
And it was, I mean, yeah, again, I was old at that point. And I had this great mentor, this woman who was running the satellite office where we lived. It's a Seattle-based firm. And she kind of took me under her wing. And at first I was just like very confused and dejected, and it was a tough year, but I learned a lot. I got to work on a couple beautiful houses and a library for this community. And I heard something on your podcast about, you know, I think that there's architects out there that can do amazing stuff on a limited budget. And I feel like it's something that is people in Colorado, including us, struggle more with
right.
here, you know?
Yeah.
And I don't know if it's more, there's more craftsmen out there, there's better materials, there's, you know, appreciation of smaller footprints, whatever it is.
Different climate,
yeah. Lots, so many factors, you know.
Not an easy one there either.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah,
not an
true.
Easy
it's
one.
It's cold, but
yeah.
It's north. It's north.
Yeah, that was, it was a really amazing experience, but I did feel very badly about leaving Steve in Clutch, but it actually turned out to be a good
in
thing.
In hindsight, is the best thing that ever happened, and you would never, ever choose that path. Like, but I think we were at the point where we were starting to like restart the conversation about partnership, and it was just kind of awkward. Like, how
yeah.
do we go from Morgan, Steve, and then like Griffin or whatever? Like,
yeah, yeah.
yeah
exactly.
Like, how do you do that? Are you just like, I don't know. I mean, all these firms do. You've interviewed people that have done that, and I've talked to people, but it's still like, it's just like, so by Morgan leaving, I took over. It was my firm, and I did a really bad job of running it. And that's the only way I could have gotten past. Like, I feel like you would still be like, Steve, that's not how you get money,
right.
like invoice, whatever. Like, I just had to learn all the hard things, and it was really intense, but you know, I like things to suck. So
worked out.
so but in Morgan was like, you obviously you were great in that you would like every week at our, you were there for any question and answer. I asked you so many questions, and sure. You would call into our weekly meetings for a while. You were always like running to work. You were like jogging
physically,
and like yeah
physically.
You would like
one hour, would be one like hour away. Behind, yeah. Yeah.
away from work, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, one or the other.
And that gave me the chance to learn to run a business, you know, while we had these like little projects, and it was financially really didn't work out great that first year, but like by the end of that first year, I feel like, okay, I can do this. And we were still like, the amazing thing is like, we didn't lose clients. I don't know why, but and even some of the builders that we had repeat customers through were continued to call me. But then, yeah, when Morgan moved back to Leadville, Kathleen got a job opportunity up there. And then you played that really well, being like, okay, twist. We were just starting to like, it was 2020, so we were starting to get some new, exciting, bigger projects and leads. And I couldn't do it anymore. I was like, I don't know, I would have died. Like if
right.
I wanted to take them, I didn't have the bandwidth. And so Morgan coming back at that time was a godsend. And it was amazing. You became such a better architect. it was very noticeable.
It was pretty bad before. I'm still bad, but I'm less bad.
It was like you were forcing us to step up our design game, and also just like our drawings, like, and you know, showing like, okay, this is how they did it. And I didn't really have good context because I had been working on schools. Like
right.
A 45,000 square foot school is not very helpful as a precedent for your
right.
like
looking back at those
2,000 square foot house.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So, and then the Tommy Hine days were long gone. I didn't steal enough drawings from him. I didn't
right.
have any good, and those weren't applicable either.
Yeah.
Especially not trying to do passive house level stuff. So that was just like, and I think it put us both at this mutual like need for each other. Like,
yeah.
Like I needed Morgan to come back, and I think you,
I needed to take me back.
Yeah.
you needed to then tell other people that they are bad.
So it just repeats the cycle. Totally. Yes. So when Morgan tells me my design is bad, I'm just like, oh, thank you. Okay, that is exactly what I need to hear.
No, that is cool. Of those situations where it's like, this is over. It's done. Like what? And then it somehow comes back back stronger and better. And you know, I look at your, it is interesting because I do feel like they're looking at your work kind of on the website and things like there was, you know, it's continuing to get better and to improve and yeah, you guys swept up at the AIA awards and got two awards and just being in the environment of the office, it just had a good, great feeling, a great collaborative feeling of people really kind of trying to continue to push, and especially with you guys leading in this sort of passive house realm. I'm looking forward to what you're doing, and thanks for coming on and talking about it.
Yeah, thanks for having us. It's been great.
You can visit architecting.com, that's architect-ing.com, to see images from this week's guest.
And please rate and review the show wherever you listen to podcasts.
Have a great week and keep connecting.
Hi, I'm Eli. This show is made by my mom and dad and these people.
Heidi Mendoza. Emily Childs.
Fernando Queiroz.
Zach Huff.
Trevor Motzko.
Aaron Best.
Kyle Brunner.
Rob Cleary.
This podcast is powered by The Plug.